Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the WTF One That Time When podcast. My name's Matthew Gallagher, and joining me for a very interesting topic of that time when, well, Schumacher won his 91st and last Grand Prix, it is two of my favourite people to be on in my Discord server right now. It's Dan Thorne and Tom Bellingham. How are we?
Very good, thanks. Looking forward to this one.
Yeah, not too bad.
You are the only people in the server currently, but that doesn't make you any less of my favourite.
Of course, that's the running gag of this podcast, right?
It's not a gag. It's real. It's real love. Right, so today we're throwing back to the end of the 2006 season, and we're going to talk about Schumi. I'll try not to fanboy too hard, but, you know, for people that know me, know that I am a huge Schumacher fanboy, so any sort of negative comments from either of you, and I will not be having it. But at the same time,
you're not passionate, just a fanboy about Schumi, and you don't even care, do you?
No, yeah, I'm full fanboy. There's passion, there's fanboyism, there's love, there's everything that you could possibly wish for in a fanboy, and that's me for Schumi. So won't deny it. So let's look at the 2006 season then. Fernando Alonso was obviously his main rival throughout the entire season. He was pretty dominant in the first half. But Schumacher and Ferrari, they came back in the second half and gave people like me some hope.
Yeah, Schumacher catching up after not the greatest start to the season. Sounds a little bit like, which we'll go into, the 2003 season when Ferrari caught up. Don't actually remember the controversial rule change that you've written. So do you want to go into that, Dan?
Yeah. So first half of the season was basically all Fernando Alonso. He won 6 of the first 9 races, was second in the other 3, had 5 poles in a row, which is, you know, a very sort of un-Alonso stat because qualifying wasn't necessarily his thing. And then he had a bit of a blip at Indianapolis, which was a track that he was never that good at, which Schumacher won. Schumacher also won in France with Alonso second. But then ahead of the next race in Germany, Renault or the FIA announced that a device called the tuned mass damper would no longer be allowed, which was basically a device that Renault had sort of pioneered the previous season, which, to kind of simplify it a bit, was basically just a weight on a spring that was located at the front of the car, which meant that when the car went over curbs, this weight would sort of move around and keep the front of the car stable, which obviously improves aero and helps in slow corners and over curbs and things like that. So that was a big thing about the Renault, which was part of the reason why it was so competitive. Ferrari had it as well, but it wasn't quite as developed as Renault's version. The FIA banned it, apparently not due to request from Ferrari, but another team. So that was banned because it was apparently a movable aerodynamic device, which is a little bit weird because it was located inside the car. And although it did move and did affect the aerodynamics, you know, that rule, it's always thought that the intention of that is things like if moving the front wing or the rear wing, kind of like if you use DRS outside of a DRS zone, that would be movable aerodynamics and would be illegal.
A classic F1 rule where you can argue it either way and people will have argued it.
You could argue like the driver's head is a movable aerodynamic device, so you're going to ban drivers with heads from racing, sort of thing. Like,
yeah.
So that was a slightly controversial rule change. He also had some bad luck. He was leading the Hungarian Grand Prix by a mile, and then a wheel came off after his pit stop. In Monza, he had a problem during qualifying, had to come in and get it sorted, and then had a very narrow window to go out and set his final lap. And he was about 3 or 4 seconds ahead of Felipe Massa at the time. And on his out lap, Alonso set like the fastest second and third sector, trying not to block Massa. But then Ferrari complained that the weight from Alonso's car had interfered with Massa's lap, and the FIA gave Alonso a penalty for impeding.
Oh, I remember that.
That was incredibly ridiculous. And I think Alonso said, like, oh, F1's not a sport anymore, and said some really controversial stuff.
I think I remember saying the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it was ridiculous. And then his engine blew up in the race to add insult to injury, which kind of put Schumacher right back in the title fight after some bad races for Alonso and the car losing some competitiveness because of the rule change.
It's very mysterious, isn't it? This how things get banned and things that are, well, back in 2006, maybe not so much now, but it just seemed like, you know, Ferrari International Assistance and all that stuff that people joke about now. But, it, you know, there's no concrete evidence really to say which way, but the penalties were strange, as you say, Dan. And but then it wasn't just that. It was Alonso just having bad luck and blowing his engine or, you know, maybe pushing his engine too hard after getting the penalty. And there's things like that, which obviously didn't help him.
Yeah.
It did sum up this era where the title always seemed to go down to the final race and they weren't afraid to make rule changes to close up the title. You know, you had and like ridiculous penalties as well from many years.
Then you look at 2004 and when, you know, Ferrari won pretty much everything and there wasn't really anything to rein them back when that was happening. But either way, let's look towards the Chinese Grand Prix. A lot of people, if you're more of a modern fan of Formula One, will recognise the Chinese Grand Prix as one of the starting races on the calendar. But back in 2006, it was round 16 of 18. So one of the final races, which in my head now, you know, I'm completely... You just think of it as a starter, don't you? You kind of forget that it was one of the last rounds in the year.
Yeah, it's one of those that seems very weird now when you look back on certain races where they've changed, like Interlagos being at the start like it used to be. But yeah, the Chinese Grand Prix was very much the tail end of the season. Obviously, 2007, the year after as well, played pivotal. But yeah, this was right in the mix of the championship fight between Schumi and Alonso.
And this was just after Schumacher announced his retirement after winning the previous race at Monza, which was, a dark, dark day for myself. Obviously, there had been rumours and, you know, things that would suggest that Schumi was going to retire. But, you always, especially when you're a fanboy like me, I had my head in the sand just hoping to God he was going to just stay around for a couple more years. And, you know, there's a lot of arguments that he should have and that he wasn't ready to, well, with the fact that he came back to Formula One, I don't think he was ready to really leave at that moment. And would he have won 2007? Most likely. but you know, that's just the way it works, doesn't it? And so Schumi was ready to give it his absolute all in these last three races.
Yeah. I mean, the rumour was and still is that, you know, it wasn't necessarily Schumacher's decision to retire and it was kind of forced out. But that might be a story for another day. So his motivation was massive.
Yeah, ready to win the championship. And the title fight was absolutely spicy. It was one of those ones that was properly anticipated. With only three rounds to go, Alonso just 2 points ahead of Schumacher. Obviously, it's the older points table. So less points difference. It's 10, 8, 6, 4.
Yeah.
10, 8, 6.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Yeah, there you go. Beautiful. Thanks, guys. So let's look to the race build-up then. So not historically a good track for Schumacher, and Renault were starting to look like they were back on form. And that was shown in qualifying, where Alonso was comfortably on pole and Schumi only down in sixth, which was kind of suggesting that Alonso could definitely put the title back into his hands if he could win and Schumi have a bad result.
I remember Schumacher disliking China quite a lot, and he was very unlucky there. I believe when it first started, I think he was one of the reasons he didn't like it as well was, didn't he get harassed quite a lot by a lot of silly questions from new journalists? And he because it was a new sport in China, and Schumacher was obviously the hero of Formula One and very much the superstar like Hamilton is today. It was very much he had a lot of media commitments and stuff, and he just never really got on with the track either. I remember him making uncharacteristic mistakes. Didn't he get ploughed in the back of it in a warm-up lap, or it might have even been the way to the grid?
It was on the way to the grid. He crashed into Christian Albers, I think.
Yeah, so very unshumi-like.
Yeah, don't bring up those moments, okay? I'm going to start crying. but yeah, as you say, he didn't particularly like China, and qualifying was pretty poor from him. And when we look to the race now, it was wet at the start, and of course there was the whole Bridgestone versus Michelin tire war, and in the wet the Michelins had the advantage. And as the race started, Alonso led the way from Raikkonen and Fisichella, and Schumi slowly making progress as the track dries. And that was just the completely different element that we have now, where obviously everybody has the same tyres and it's more about the tyre strategy and what compound they go on. This was more a case of, is it going to favour the Michelins now? Is it going to favour the Bridgestones? Where's the crossover? It was a completely different viewing experience.
Yeah. The Michelin tyres, generally, the wetter it was, the better they were. I mean, we had the Hungarian Grand Prix earlier in the year where the Bridgestone runners really struggled, which is Ferrari, basically, and Michelin were really good when it was wetter. But as it dried out, I think it was believed that the Michelin intermediates were a bit better than the Bridgestone intermediates were a bit better than the Michelin. So you had this constantly sort of evolving picture where different cars would be fast at different stages of the race.
Yeah, I loved the tyre war. It was whether it would work nowadays, but there's obviously pros and cons to it. But that was this race was probably a perfect example of why a tyre war was so exciting, because it came to drivers in certain situations, and it wouldn't just be wet weather, it could be track temperature as well, where someone would start putting in incredible laps because they had the superior tires on.
Now, as the race evolved, the track also dried out, but it was drying quite slowly, so Pete, they were in that kind of really weird part where they kind of had to pit the drivers at the front but also didn't really know what choice to make, whether they're going to go onto fresh tires, whether they're going to stay on the intermediates and just wear down the grooves in the tyres so that they essentially become slicks. Obviously they didn't, but they became better in slightly drier conditions and didn't overheat as much with less tread on the tyres. But there was some different strategies, and this is where it all kind of fell away for Alonso, with Fisichella and Schumacher staying on worn inters and pitted only for fuel, which obviously if they thought that was the best way, that also saved time in the pits as well. Whereas Alonso only changed the front tyres, which was a gamble that, you know, when you've got Fisichella staying on worn inters, you'd probably just try and mirror that. But Alonso just went for a completely different strategy and decided to only change his fronts, which just absolutely ruined his race.
Yeah, I think at the start of the race when it was wet, Alonso had gone a bit too hard and worn his tyres a little bit more, which is why he had to change them. Because he'd built up a lead and then had lost pace as the pit stops come. So obviously the thinking was, oh, it's okay, if we put some new fronts on, we'll get that pace back and be sort of in a similar place to where Schumacher and Fisichella are, but it didn't work out.
No, the balance was completely wrong, and Alonso was dreadfully slow as Fisichella.
It's a weird thing as well, the changing only one, like two tyres. I don't know if that would be legal now, because you have to change, they have to be the right set of tyres.
Yeah, you wouldn't be able to do it. It depends if I don't even know if, like you say, it's legal. They could maybe change the two back ones, but like you say, when you go into the stop now, because it's normally a one-stop race, you tend to change to a different compound, don't you? So it's very unlikely.
Yeah, and you've got limits on wet tyres per weekend and stuff, so it probably wouldn't be doable now.
So with Alonso on the terrible strategy and the struggling for pace, we then had that really strange situation where his own teammate, who was, you know, have to say his rear gunner at this point in the championship, was catching and passed his teammate, as well as Schumacher as well. So it was a very strange situation for Renault, I imagine, where they were just thinking, you know, what do we do here? Do we just try and get Alonso to stay out and Fisichella just back Schumacher up? But the pace difference was so huge that they couldn't do that.
Didn't Fisichella mess about quite a bit trying to overtake him? And there was one of the strange moments where Fisichella almost didn't know whether he should be passing him or not, because, like you say, it's such a unique and strange situation where you want to help out your teammate and you don't know whether the best way to help your teammate is to back Schumacher away from him or to essentially try and get in front of him and make sure Schumacher doesn't win the race.
Yeah, it's awkward as well, because Fisichella wasn't anywhere near Alonso's pace ever, really, his teammate. So it was, you know, an unusual situation for him to be in, I suppose.
So after that, Alonso dropped back because his pace was still struggling, and he pit for slicks on lap 35. And his problems became even worse as he had a problem in the pits, had a really slow stop, and then was over 50 seconds behind. And now we look to one of my favourite moments, actually full-on tingles when that happened, when Schumacher eventually took the lead, which I believe was turn... Oh, no, he got past Alonso at turn two, I think it was, wasn't it, at China, around the long right-hander, then on the left. Was that right? Does my memory serve me correct?
I can't remember.
Okay, well, I do. I'm going to say it was turn two because Alonso was struggling a lot. But I think he may have passed Fisichella on the straight. But either way, Schumacher taking the lead from Fisichella on lap 41. They went onto the slicks on lap 41. And Fisichella makes a mistake on the outlap and Schumacher takes the lead. So, yeah, 41 or 42. But this is where Alonso is then absolutely rapid again. And maybe a little bit too far back.
Yeah, I mean, he's dropped so far behind. So it's obviously... He's probably got a pretty comfortable podium position, but he's obviously not going to be happy about having burned through his tyres and then had a mistake in the pit. So he's just pushing to see what he can get. And he's going ridiculously quick. I think his fastest lap in the race was something like a second quicker than anyone else's and 1.7 seconds quicker than his teammate's own fastest lap, which is, you know, he had proper pace.
He was absolutely on it. And it was squeaky bum time because obviously Schumacher did win this race, as we mentioned in the title of this video, of this podcast. But Alonso only finished 3 seconds behind in the end, which just shows that the mammoth drive that he put in. Obviously, Schumacher probably not pushing all the way because he knew he had a gap to kind of manage. But still, 3 seconds. I mean, that's a couple more laps if that was Schumacher's true pace. And Fisichella finishing a distant third. And that left the title fight. Them absolutely level on points with two races remaining. And we're thinking this is going to go down to the wire. We're going to have the best last couple of races to decide the championship. And then Schumacher decides to blow up at Japan.
Another banging race at China as well. A proper underrated track, which we mention every time that we do one of these podcasts. I don't know a track that doesn't seem to have any kind of... No one would to put it in their... top 10 list. Well, we would, because I know we all really like it. But no one seems to really rate it. But in terms of ratio of unbelievable classic brilliant races, China seems to just be right up there. There's so many good races there.
I think part of the problem is that if it doesn't have a really incredible race, it's normally unbelievably boring and everyone just remembers the ones where nothing happens at all. But like you say, like, as ratio of good to bad races, it's probably better than most other tracks.
It's because there's been a lot of wet races, and also it was very much a during the Pirelli era. The absolutely awful on the tires, that first turn just shredded them.
It's weird, isn't it? Because I find that maybe China is lacking just that little bit of showbiz element in terms of, you know, when you look at Suzuka as a classic, but we don't really have that many classics around Suzuka. But because of 130R, they're like, wow, you know, that's amazing. You know, we have such an amazing track here. Whereas China, I think, just lacks that little bit of just that stardom. You know, do you know what I mean? It's kind of just missing that element of kind of picture taking. And it's
100%. I think it's the fact that it is, even though the races are really good, it is a bit of a dull track. I like the track layout and stuff, but in terms of the whole, like I say, showmanship, there's nothing really there. It's in the middle of, isn't it like a bog that they built the track on? And it's not like it's in a cool city centre or something that makes it really exciting, Singapore.
It's always like overcast and smoggy and all the pictures look a little bit grey and bland. And it's, there's nothing eye-catching about it as a circuit, really, but it just works.
It absolutely does, and it deserves more credit than it gets, for sure. But there you go. That is pretty much it. Do either of you have anything to add on this subject, lads?
It's weird, like, remembering it back. It seems like a classic Schumi win, like, oh, it's a wet, dry race. He comes from behind out of nowhere against the odds to win it. But then looking back at it, it's you'll hate me saying this, Matt, but it's almost a little bit of a lucky win because... Raikkonen was ahead of him and his car failed. Raikkonen might well have won that race if his McLaren held together. Alonso had a problem in the pit stop, which cost him 15 seconds. Fisichella went off the track in front of him. Schumacher drove brilliantly to win it, don't get me wrong, but, you know, it wasn't, he didn't take that win that shouldn't have been his.
Yeah, there's no
others lost it.
There's no denying that, you know, Schumacher, it wasn't the fastest, as we saw with Alonso catching at the end, and it was just more of a case of being there at the right time and taking the victory when everyone else either made mistakes or had bad luck. And yeah, I won't say it's one of Schumacher's best drives, but it certainly is up there in terms of just one of those classic races that Schumacher ended up winning.
Yeah, absolutely.
Whereas later in the season, obviously in the next couple of races, which I'm sure we should definitely do a podcast about this one, but the Schumi's race in Brazil, which would be his final race in inverted commas before he obviously returned to Mercedes, that was one of those races. While he didn't win, I was willing him on for a podium, because my days, that was one of the most incredible drives. One of those drives that you think only Schumacher could have done that, been so far,
100%.
So far behind, absolutely nowhere, and he pulled his way back to the front.
I love all this Schumi love very much. We should continue with that time when about Schumi, as long as it's positive and not the fact that he parked his car at Monaco. Either way, should he have won the 2006 championship, do you reckon? I think when we look at it from China, I felt like the momentum was definitely with Schumacher and he was going to win had he not blown up at Suzuka. But in terms of maybe across the whole season and when you take into all the factors, it's difficult to say. I think they both deserve the championship.
It was an incredible title fight, and it was a bit of a shame really that Schumacher was retiring and Alonso was moving, because you'd been waiting so long for a kind of classic driver to take it. Schumacher, obviously you had Kimi in 2003, but it was never really a titanic battle, if you like. We'd been waiting for a proper kind of two horse race for the title since probably Hakkinen and Schumacher way back in 98, really. So this was very much, you know, finally someone's taking the fight to Schumacher. Schumacher's in the fight as well, which he wasn't in 2005, and you're having this incredible battle. But sadly, that was obviously the last time they did it, because Schumacher retired and Alonso moved to McLaren.
So Tommy, yes or no, should he have won the championship?
No,
Schumacher?
No, Alonso deserved it.
Okay. It's a different question. Should he have won the championship, or did he deserve? I guess if we're looking at it from China onwards, should Schumacher have won the championship had he not blown up?
No, because you can't just look at three races in isolation. Otherwise, you could look at three races early in the season for Alonso and say, like, oh, he won three in a row. Of course, he just deserved it based on those three races.
Yeah, no, it's not more of it. I'm not asking on a deserve level. I'm just saying when you're looking at the momentum, when you're looking at how the teams were and the pace of the Ferrari at Suzuka, for example, you know, they were battling, but Schumacher was winning. You kind of look at it like that. And in my head, I'm trying not to be a fanboy, but I feel like Schumi should have taken the championship from here had there been equal amounts of luck. That's kind of my point.
Oh, yeah. Had they not blown up after this race and he didn't have that failure, I very much think he would have won the title.
Yeah. At the time of the race, I was like, oh, well, that's it. Schumacher's going to win the title, because we'd spent the whole decade watching Schumacher win championships.
It's almost like a conclude. You just knew that this is how it ends. Schumacher. Yeah,
it's like, oh, well, that was fun while it lasted. Back to normal.
Yeah. Yeah. So I bet for you two, you're like, yes, Alonso. And I was there like, please, no, Schumi, get another one. either way, there you go. Thank you so much, guys. Tommy and Dan for your inputs, and there you go, Schumi, his last ever win, 91 wins. We thought it would never be beaten, but it looks like if we get underway at any point this year, it will be beaten. Unfortunately for people like myself, I'm sure there are many Schumi fans listening as well, but make sure to get involved if you have any ideas in terms of, you know, next and future That Time When podcasts. Use the hashtag WTF1 podcast, or just get involved on social media. We're on everything at WTF1 official. And we can take your ideas, because we do like them. And also give us 5 stars on whatever you're listening to, because we deserve nothing less. Isn't that right, boys?
Of course.
Oh, absolutely.
There you go. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you soon for another That Time When podcast. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Cheers and ta-ra.
Bye.
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 Be visible.
Bye.